Great morning. Great morning, everyone.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah? How are ye?
I don't know if I like that.
Oh.
Just kidding.
How art thee?
How far art thou?
Oh, I wasn't going to go that far.
Oh.
I wasn't going to go. All right. It's Cheesy Joke Thursday, apparently.
Is it?
Yeah.
That's exciting, you know, for somebody.
Supposed to be on here talking about my mastery of the art of seduction. People have responded to my Instagram post, and they want the deets. They want to know, Ambush, how did you make her your fiance? You know? What skills did you employ? Yeah.
Oh.
My DMs are full.
Oh.
Yeah.
They slid right in.
They slid right in there. Yeah.
So what's the answer?
They got it. It's behind the paywall. So.
Oh.
Sorry, guys. That was just a little bait.
We're going to have to. Doing a whole ad campaign for the Patreon that doesn't exist.
Yeah, yeah. Listen, I know we got a fun drive coming up soon.
That's true.
You know? So, maybe we'll get some, you know, make it some prizes there. You know? A one-on-one consultation.
Oh, my word.
Huh?
That's going to be really fun for you to do. And I will not be involved at all. So anybody who decides to listen to Ambush on that, good luck.
Success guaranteed.
Wow.
What?
Ambush.
That's like, all the greatest marketing works. You put the blue screen up.
100% satisfaction,
you know?
Guaranteed.
Yeah.
You're not wrong about that part.
All right.
I feel like this is going to backfire on us. I don't want Nina mad at me. That's all I'm going to say. So, like, let's double check.
What you do is you apologize in advance. Like so. Nina, apologies in advance.
Oh, bam. Done. Check that right off the list.
Yeah.
Okay.
What? It's going to be great. Everyone's going to love it.
Everyone's going to love it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, good morning, Ambush.
Good morning.
I'm happy to be here with you in Nebraska.
Yes.
I don't have anything insightful to say other than, wow, what a week.
Yeah.
It's already been such a week.
It has. And, you know, I really look forward to these Thursday mornings.
Yeah.
Because we get to get on the mic and talk crap.
Is that what we do?
Yeah. Talk big crap about people in power not doing what they're supposed to.
That's true. We do that.
Speaking of which... Senator Steve Manchin's corruption knows no bounds.
Did you just say Steve?
I did. I don't know why. Because in my head, I was like, Bannon? I don't know.
Oh, I mean.
Corruption, it just started throwing names in there.
Do know that Steve Bannon is always there somewhere.
100% guaranteed.
Okay.
Just, all right.
I just want to make everybody know that I was not prepared for this version of Ambush this morning. And I'm sure you weren't either. And you got to stop pounding on things.
All right.
Loud and not fun.
Okay. Fine. Senator Manchin's corruption knows no bounds. We're going to be all in that guy's situation.
Business.
All in his biz. J.D. Vance going full white nationalist.
Fun.
Super interesting. And the anti-gay marriage bill could also legalize child marriage.
That's always.
Yeah.
I believe they call that added value.
Right.
To a bill.
Right.
Yeah. In local stories, we'll be talking about the self-published local romance writer's trial for murdering her husband that has begun.
Mm-hmm.
Republican candidates for Oregon governor are differing on how to handle political violence, but they also differ on what they think political violence is.
Mm-hmm.
And the Portland region hemorrhaging rental properties, a report.
News editor for the Portland Mercury, Alex Zielinski, will be joining us to talk about the police oversight group being put on pause. Because, yeah, that's a great idea.
I mean, you know, just take a seat.
Mm-hmm.
I believe they call that putting a pin in it.
Circling back around.
We'll circle back around after the pin is put.
I don't like that. That's nonsense.
It's not going to really work out.
It's not.
And we also have seen it before.
So those are the topics for this morning. As always, we encourage you, shoot us a text, 971-220-5979.
Sorry, I stepped on that. Will
That's
you do
quite
it
all right. 971-220-5979. 5979. Join the conversation. And again, yes, good morning, Crystal.
Yeah, good morning, Crystal. I'm going to give another good morning. Good morning, James Robbins, in case you're listening.
Hey.
He's usually about somewhere,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Good morning, Rudo. I'm glad it's your Friday. I, too, wish it was my Friday.
Oh, man.
And we're so glad you're in our audience. Thanks.
How do I get every day to be my Friday? Is that is there a realm?
No, I think you can do that. I think once you determine what your the qualifications for your Friday, like what makes a Friday a Friday for you. And I feel like if you can, you know.
Oh, now you're just telling me to use my imagination. Okay.
This is this is the consulting that I offer. Satisfaction guaranteed.
100% satisfaction guaranteed. Ambush, I would like to jump into a national story.
I'd love to hear you, especially on this specific story.
I know that everybody believes that Joe Biden is the president. And that, well, no, not everybody believes that. I guess there are some people that believe that, you know, Donald Trump is actually still the president.
Right. Not my president.
Doing stuff or waiting, lying in wait. I did see, okay, this is not the part of the news story, but I got to say this. I saw, you know, one of my favorite things is seeing, like, reporters talk with people at rallies and that kind of stuff. And there was a...
Jordan Klepper is a pro at it.
He is a top tier.
Yeah.
But this was actually, like, it's not Newsmax, but it's the same ilk, you know, mm-hmm. the, like,
Newsmax
not news, but...
Those people.
Yeah,
like,
it... Mm-hmm. But a smaller outlet, I guess. Mm-hmm. And so that lady was out on her beat and talking to a Trump supporter at a rally. And she explained that Space Force.
Yes.
Has actually all of the knowledge, all of the receipts, all of the details of the actual stolen election from Donald Trump, obviously.
Right.
We're unsure what they're waiting for. I mean, that is a arm of the military, I guess,
yes.
now. And so I'm not sure why they haven't just, you know, told their bosses that they have all this info and intel.
Well, dear,
but
they've
got
up in space.
They've got the satellite footage of the corruption happening.
Yeah.
I mean, they watched the votes leave. And so, you know, it's just a matter of time.
Mm.
Anyway, I know that there are some people that think Joe Biden is president. But really, it's Senator Joe Manchin.
Yeah.
He is he's wearing the big pants. He is in charge. And we're just learning a lot more about this guy. And that guy's corruption literally knows
no bounds. None.
So, Senator Joe Manchin has soared to national notoriety during the Biden administration as the obstacle to many of the president's more progressive plans. Now, a New York Times investigation has revealed a quote, stunning portrait of political corruption regarding the West Virginia senator's connections to a prominent local power plant. Beginning in 1987, Manchin's relationship with Granttown Power Plant saw him first clearing the plant for development despite concerns of the EPA. Following that, a Manchin-owned company sold, quote, garbage of, I don't even know how to pronounce this.
Bituminous.
Yep, I'll take that
yes.
for $1,000, Alex. Thank you. A coal mining byproduct that can be used to provide energy. In effect, Manchin's constituents were paying him for the power that they used. And as gob is less energy efficient than pure coal, they were overpaying by the millions for over 20 years.
Mm.
The corruption doesn't end there. Manchin pushed through tax credits and rate increases that hurt West Virginians but helped his and the energy plant's profits. Manchin has insisted that his dealings with Granttown has provided jobs and helped West Virginia's industry. He promises that no rules have ever been broken in his dealings with the plant. Whether or not any rules have been broken, the connection to dirty energy has absolutely affected his political agenda. The most blatant case being his blocking of the Build Back Better Act, which axed a $555 billion investment into clean energy. I want to say, there is something that really, really bothers me about people that are supposed to be public servants that tell elected officials that tell you that they are here to help their constituents. They want to make your life better. They're going to do all of these things. We're going to get these jobs going, all of that stuff. There is absolutely something wrong in my mind with those people becoming multimillionaires off of the backs of the people that they're supposed to be representing. I remember having, you know, multiple, wouldn't call them arguments, but disagreements with people about politicians being able to be involved in trading stocks when they are very clearly getting immediate, not only insider information, but also that affects their policy, right? Like if you are Joe Manchin here, you're going to make sure that there isn't, you know, the clean energy isn't going to be a priority. And you're going to continue to buy stocks in things like dirty energy that will continue to kill this planet. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't matter to you because you're wealthy now, your family's going to be fine, and you're going to get to live on that yacht while the rest of us perish. I think there's something wrong with that. I don't think that if you're going to be a politician, I don't think that anyone should be destitute, obviously, but I don't think that you should be getting millions and millions of dollars in backroom deals and then lying to your constituents about it. I mean, he's got kickbacks built in to coal. Of course you don't want that to go away.
Yeah.
Of course you need that as an energy source. As a, you know, like, I'm not in West Virginia. I got to believe some of those folks know that he's doing this.
Right.
I got to believe that, you know, some local reporters have put this on their docket for years and years and years. And that's the other thing. Why in the world do these people get to be in charge for so long? I understand that they're being voted for, but in when you amass so much wealth and you become the face of certain things, and we all know that there is a very large faction of people that are apathetic to what's going on in the world and are just like, oh, yeah, that's Joe Manchin. He's always been our senator. We'll just vote for him again.
Mm-hmm.
There's got to be some sort of why aren't we looking re-looking at these term limits? You know, I don't understand. There's retirement ages around all over other industries, except for the most powerful positions in this country. You can do that till you die.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we have such a casual relationship with our politicians, and we stay in, well, a great deal of us stay in a constant state of disappointment with them at the exact same time.
So, yeah.
You know, it's almost like we want to hold them accountable, right? The great majority of us, like, they got to do something. But then you look to them and they're like, they throw their hands and they're like, we can't do anything. It's beyond our control.
How are we supposed to handle this?
Right.
It's really hard for me to understand. It's very hard for me to explain to my children who are just like, I don't get it. Why does he get to still have a job? I don't know. I don't know. It's a clear conflict of interest when politicians are able to become multimillionaires while in office and while their towns
suffer. Yeah.
Big time.
Yeah.
I mean, I have always had this issue. If we know the effects of the dangerous effects of coal mining and working in that industry, it kills people.
Yeah.
The idea that we wouldn't, one, want to find a better way to do that so that these people that you want to make laborers all the time actually have something that they can continue to do. But also, as if there's no money, right, in the clean energy sector, like as if there's no money in innovation.
Yeah.
It's just this old, like, I'm just going to sit in this mindset. The only way I know how to do this is this. And I don't want to talk about, I mean, he could be a billionaire on solar. You know what I mean?
That's the wild part.
And not that I want him to, obviously.
That's the wild part. But wouldn't you rather, you know what I'm saying? Like, we need, it goes back to your point. Like, we need some fresh, young minds who are unafraid of technology and moving into the future, who are actually in love with moving into the future. These are the people that we need.
And I don't mean like Elon Musk or something who's faking it all and just stealing everybody's money.
This guy.
And by that, I mean exploiting everyone's labor.
Yeah.
Speaking really quickly of that dude, he bought into Twitter like crazy. He is now a 10% stakeholder of that company. Yeah. And he is just, I know, I understand that a lot of people like him because he is also like a troll. Thinker. No, dragon's he's just a troll. Blood. Like, okay. He'll just, dragon blood. He'll just do the dumb stuff, you know? Like, he wrote on Zuckerberg's wall or something, like, can I buy Facebook now? And what we don't need, friends, is Elon Musk owning all of the social meds. I mean, we should all not be on Facebook, in my personal opinion. But too much money automatically equals an abuse of power for people that are abusive with power.
Dude, like, what are you doing? I could talk about Elon for a minute. I don't want to get too far down the rabbit hole.
Sorry.
Because
that one's my bad.
No, it's quite all right. I mean, while we're talking about, you know, politicians abusing their power and you know, especially when it comes to stocks, like Nance, you know, huh? Nancy.
Yeah.
I believe is
Nance gotta go.
She's another.
The old Pelosi.
It's really interesting with this particular new deal that Manchin has in place here. So for him to, make space for this new oil manufacturing company, while at the same time pursuing a coal mine. And then once the everything went through for the manufacturing company, he sold the mine to that company with the 1% kickback on anything they manufacture from that particular company. Like, this is just happening broad daylight right now. This isn't something decades ago that we're uncovering. No, this literally just happened.
It's amazing.
Yeah, it's
absolutely astounding. Yeah. I know that part of the reason that they are able to get away with it in broad daylight is the propaganda has been forever that politicians lie and they're corrupt, and that's just what we're needing to expect from from politicians.
Yeah.
You know, we shouldn't have to expect that, and we can hold people to a better standard, and I want us to do that. I want us to do that so bad, because someone like Joe Manchin should not be able to profit any of these folks. But doing that, you know, selling the mine, getting the kickbacks,
yeah,
making, you know, overcharging West Virginians for power for 20 years. Like, it's a whole mess.
It is. It is. I like that you have to keep reminding people that you're not going to just wake up with the opportunities and the open doors awaiting you as you just walk into millionairedom. Like, you got to look at these people's history. You got to look at where they come from, the stock, and what is responsible for where they are today. This isn't, you know, pull yourself up by your bootstraps. Went to the best schools and, you know, worked really hard. I started out working at a tire shop and then putting my good hours there. This isn't how this happens. Not at all. There is a legacy.
I was just going to say, when your bootstraps have a legacy attached to it.
Yeah. It's often the legacy of corruption. Okay. Purchased degrees and, you know, nepotism. There's just so much involved. Everything that you love about these scandalous TV shows is what's playing out in real life and what your politicians are involved in.
And now he is a person that gets to block and just be in the way of actual legislation that could help, you
right.
know. And it's wild to me that you would like block people getting money when you out here just Scrooge McDuckin, you know, like you're doing the backstroke in your coins.
Yeah.
It doesn't hurt you.
Yeah.
And I can't understand how people do that.
We just got a text. We can skip an age limit for senators, but how about a net worth limit?
I'm talk to me nice. Yes. I don't know about skipping the age limit, though.
I'm gonna tell you this. Let's get a little of both in there.
You know, love my parents to death, but it's different now.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
The mid and upper 70s changed the game.
All right, let's talk about some game changing here.
Mm.
That old J.D. Vance.
I got a lot to say about this, so I'm going to be quiet and hold my commentary.
In a baffling creative choice, Ohio Senator, Senate candidate, J.D. Vance asked voters if they, quote, hate Mexicans. Vance is referring to the media's characterization of proponents of the U.S.-Mexico border wall as being racist by asking if voters are racist. Vance is trying to challenge that narrative, but then proceeds to go on a racist rant claiming that, quote, Joe Biden's open border is killing Ohioans, with more illegal drugs and more Democrat voters pouring into this country. There's a geographical challenge to that, which Morgan will elaborate a little bit later. But, you know, I get mixed up where my states are, too. He then goes on to essentially blame his mother's struggle with addiction on the open border. Critics are rightfully pointing out the shameful nature of Vance's fear-mongering. But there's something even more insidious about Vance's message. By naming and then dismissing the accusation of racism, Vance is effectively giving his supporters a rhetorical shield against valid criticism. He's emboldening his base to feel unashamed, though there is much to be ashamed of, for their views and to scoff at any challenge to them. Defenders of Vance's message have admitted as much. U.S. Representative Jim Banks tweeted, J.D. Vance is the most articulate America First candidate in the USA. Though the Ohio race is a close one, a Trump endorsement could put Vance in the lead. What dimension are we in? We have that clip, right?
I would love if we could just play this ad really fast, and then we'll chit-chat about it.
Mm.
Are you a racist? Do you hate Mexicans? The media calls us racist for wanting to build Trump's wall. They censor us, but it doesn't change the truth. Joe Biden's open border is killing Ohioans, with more illegal drugs and more Democrat voters pouring into this country. This issue is personal. I nearly lost my mother to the poison coming across our border. No child should grow up an orphan. I'm J.D. Vance, and I approve this message because whatever they call us, we will put America first.
We will put America first. Okay, a couple of things. If you are unfamiliar with J.D. Vance, he is the person who wrote the memoir, Hillbilly Elegy, or however you say that, that then became a Netflix movie that was directed by Ron Howard and stars Glenn Close and Amy Adams. And why I am annoyed with that star power is things like this give people like that a lot of credibility, and it gives their name a lot of recognition.
Oh yeah.
And rehabs like sort of preemptively their public persona. He's a venture capitalist who makes lots of monies, and he definitely has this, you know, bootstrap narrative of, you know, blue collar Ohio, mom was a nurse. And what we need to keep in mind, one, Ohio, not near the southern border.
Are you sure?
I actually am positive. I'm actually sure that's not near the southern border.
They're coming across.
They might be. And I guess maybe if they make it to Ohio, once they do, maybe they are there now. But also, this whole idea that anybody migrating to this country then becomes a Democratic voter, I would like to introduce you to Florida.
Right.
I would like to introduce you to the many Cubans who are... who would disagree with that.
Yeah.
Who are staunchly Republican.
Yeah.
And also, there are a lot of conservative views from immigrants coming to America because that's the propaganda that they got.
Right.
They believe in that bootstrap narrative too. But yeah, so he does this movie. He already told us our story, or his story. He already told us his mom was a nurse and was an opioid addict and was stealing opioids from work. I don't think that has anything to do with anybody coming across any border or anybody bringing any drugs in. Should you not, sir, be incredibly upset with the Sacklers, I think? Should we talk about the people that brought those across this border?
Yeah.
Who flooded your town with opioids. Should we think about them, maybe? It is absolutely insane that you would... We know this. This is not questionable.
Right.
We know...
You sold this film.
But we know who brought... We know why there's an opioid epidemic. We know that's Big Pharma. That is not in any way a cartel.
Right.
They didn't create that in the lab, right? And then bring it here.
Right.
That's not how it got here, friend. That's not what happened to your mom. So, one, how in the world do you get to use this narrative that migrants coming over the border are bringing in the drugs that got your mom hooked on drugs? And you almost lost her. That is absolutely not true. And the idea that there are going to be so many people that believe that and so many people that run with it, maybe they don't even believe it, but they run with it.
Right.
They say it. You got old boy out here saying he's the most articulate America First candidate. That's America First. Just flatly lying? Just flatly being racist? I mean, it is pretty American, but...
Yeah.
J.D. Vance has a little problem, too, because he has not been endorsed by Trump. Because he first, you know, was a maybe not anti-Trump, but was embarrassed by him and had things to say and had to double back and be like, oh, no, I mean,
he's a pretty solid guy.
He's a pretty solid guy. Make America great again. And, you know, Trump does not forget when you have said you don't like his tie. So he certainly does not forget when you're like, oh, that guy is maybe not the best candidate we've ever seen.
Yeah. But he will use you.
Yeah.
He will certainly use you.
He will definitely use you.
While you're groveling for his approval.
Indeed.
Yeah.
And he will also make fun of you while you're groveling for his approval. It'll be interesting to see if Trump, you know, turns around and endorses this guy.
Yeah.
And another reason why we're very upset that these impeachments went nowhere, because Trump can run again.
Yeah. Congrats.
He can still be in power. He can still have anything to say about who's going to be president or not.
Look at what the Democrats gave us at the county fair.
Oh, huh?
Look what they delivered to us.
I would have rather had like a life-size dinosaur, stuffed dinosaur, you know, that wouldn't fit in my car and I'd have to like strap it down to the hood.
Yeah. Coming back from Six Flags.
Not the hood.
The roof.
The roof.
I think the part of this that really has me befuddled is just the glaring inaccuracies.
Yes.
That he's totally comfortable standing on camera, properly lit, properly mic'd, and delivering. Unless he's talking about putting a wall at the border of his state. I don't even know what we're talking about. One. Two.
They're coming over Lake Erie, everybody.
Right. Tying your mother's struggle with addiction.
Listen. How
recontextualize,
gross.
Retconning, if you will. To tie this into drugs coming across the border, when it's documented, you got paid licensing and rights to have this produced and on Netflix or wherever it is, that tells the story. Like, you know this story is out there. But your
you
campaign,
wrote it.
Right. Your campaign, your people said, you know what? Hey, doesn't matter. We can still go this route. Why doesn't it matter? That's where my issue is. Why is this possible? Why is it possible that someone can blatantly just run on lies?
There's
no digging. Rachel Maddow does not have to go after anything on this. This
right.
is like right in your face.
Well, I mean, also, this is a person who capitalized off of his mother's struggle and said, ooh. I'm going to make it my story about how it affected me. I didn't read that book.
Mm-hmm.
I did not watch that movie, but I know that the trailer and all of the hoopla about it are definitely about Amy Adams and Glenn Close. Not a whole lot about the little boy that plays J.D. Vance. Mm. You know, shout out to whoever that actor is.
Right.
But you decided to capitalize on that. Are you using any of that money for addiction services? Are you setting up any rehabs anywhere so that people can get to rehab? What are you doing with capitalizing on addiction stories? Mm. Nothing. Because what you're doing is pretending that that wasn't really what it was. It
right.
was Mexicans brought things across the border. And that's how my mom lost her job. I mean, right. like, literally getting fired because you're stealing patients' opioids.
That's a reason to get fired.
It's just absolutely stunning to me that that can be an ad that starts out with, are you a racist? Do you hate Mexicans? And there's no combating that narrative that he does in that ad.
Right.
It's not like he says, I'm not a racist. I'm telling you that I know for certain this is what happened to my family. No, he's not doing that. It's literally throwing it out there. It's the, what's his name? George Wallace strategy, where if they call you, if someone says you're racist, tell them they're the racist. Like, that is exactly what he's doing to just deflect. Like, it doesn't even matter if they call you that, because I know you're not. I know you're not.
Right.
You just don't want to see those drugs in your community. You just don't want all those Democratic voters. That narrative is just absolutely shocking to me, too, that everyone, the fact that they are pretending as if people who are undocumented can vote. It is just wild to me that there are people that believe that. I mean, what? It just doesn't work that way. What is hilarious to me is all of, you know, we spent however many years with Trump saying that there were all these illegal votes and pouring in from undocumented people and all these double votes and people were voting in all these different states. And all of the votes that have been exposed to be people voted in two states are like part of his actual circle.
Right.
Like his actual
his homies.
People that were a part of his campaign,
right.
People that were a part of his administration. Like, it's the projection for me. It's the, I'm just going to say this and say that they're doing it so that no one thinks I'm doing it. Like, bro.
But it's successful. It's actually successful. That is so disturbing. We got
it
a
really
text.
Is.
Malcolm, what's good? Malcolm's becoming a regular. Good morning, y'all. Mm-hmm. Going back to your point on immigrants and political affiliation, as an Arab American, I've had plenty of conversations with people in the Middle Eastern community who were Bush voters at the height of the Iraq war.
What, Malcolm?
Or more recently, they've supported Trump. It makes me want to pull my hair out.
I am pulling my hair out, Malcolm. But yes, you're absolutely right. That is just, makes my stomach hurt.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, the propaganda works. The American imperialist propaganda goes everywhere. Absolutely. And we just don't have enough pushback on it. We don't have enough. There isn't enough money. There's no Coke money on the left, you know,
right.
to say all of this just isn't true. And let's show you how. Like, we just don't have it. And we do need that money to be able to fight back on some of these, you know, propagandist moves. It is just wild to me that you can make people who you are actively hurting believe that you could actually want to and will help them.
Right. There are dog whistles. This is a bullhorn.
There you go.
Just like, do you hate Mexicans? I want to be in that room when they were crafting this. I want to be a fly on that wall and just be like, what didn't make it?
Right.
You know, this is what
Do
made
you say
it.
Say the N-word at your dinner table.
Like, I wouldn't know what didn't make the cut.
What didn't make the cut?
Wow.
Because that's some wild money right there, just flat out. Yeah. So, friends, don't fall for it. Don't fall for that. Well, he said he's not racist. Quit asking what's in people's hearts. They keep showing you who they are.
Even better. Well, he said I'm not racist.
He said I'm not racist. Well, and I mean, you know, that's we know who that message is for. That right. message is for the racists who want to continue to do racist things, who want their country back from the grips of, you know, political correctness.
Yeah.
Or I'm sorry, cancel culture.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the fact that we could ever be talking about Joe Byron as a progressive or as, you know, some far left person that they continue. It does not get more centrist.
Yeah.
It does not get more diet Republican.
In what world? In what world, y'all?
It's just words. They're just throwing it out there. It's just words.
Yeah. Yep. Yep.
Got to move on because there's two stories that I want to make sure that we get to, the local stories that we absolutely have to hit today. And we have gone long on the commentary. I apologize.
No. That's what I'm here for. I tune in for the commentary.
Oh, do you?
Yeah. I'm going to shoot us a text right now.
Great. And then you'll be the one to read it.
Yes.
I'm going to shoot us a text right now. Should I just roll in?
Yeah.
Real quick.
Oh,
we'll,
yeah.
We'll hit the Nancy Brophy story really fast, and then I want to get to this, the governor race. Mm-hmm. So self-published local romance writer's trial for murdering her husband has begun. On Tuesday, witnesses took the stand in the trial of Nancy Crampton Brophy, who is accused of murdering her husband, Dan, in 2018. Dan Brophy, a chef at the Oregon Culinary Institute, was found dead in a test kitchen while his students waited for class to start. A first responder testified while administrating aid, he discovered a spent bullet casing. Though the trial began on Monday, Crampton Brophy is expected to testify at some point. I want to give just a little background. If you guys don't remember this, this woman is a self-published romance writer. She also wrote a essay.
Wait for it.
Called How to Kill Your Husband. That will not be entered into the trial. The judge found on Monday that that would just be more, how do they say it? It's more prejudicial than probative. I think that's how you say
Nebraska,
it.
Nebraska, have you ever heard of such a thing?
Yeah.
Have you ever?
Yes. I'm not Nebraska, but yeah.
I mean.
Nebraska's heard of this.
You write the essay. And then you commit the crime.
Nebraska said not outside of a How to Get Away with Murder episode.
It's the first thing that came to my mind. I was like, wait, what?
I have never watched that show. But I just, the title is perfect anyway. Yeah, I mean, I read the essay. It's something. And
you did read it?
Yeah.
Wait a minute.
You know, no, don't even try.
Okay.
The thing is, there was... we're just going to move on, Ambush. We're not even going to pretend like I'm doing... No. No.
Was it for research purposes?
Do we do the news every Thursday? Fine. Yeah, it was for research purposes.
All right. I don't want to find any print copies.
Also, it was bad. It's just, like, not,
it was just really bad.
It's just not good.
And then you pull up to the corner. And you look both ways.
You know, the crazy thing is it was way more like, well, you don't really, if you use a gun, it gets bloody and messy. If you use a knife, it's bloody and messy and hard to do. If you.
What?
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of like that.
That's terrible.
I do understand why the judge is saying that would be more prejudicial than is fair in a trial. And the only reason I understand that is because of all of these, you know, police murders or murders by the police that we have seen where things don't get entered into evidence. And yeah. I'm like, what in the world? We, all of us watch that thing.
Right.
How come you can't see it? So I do understand that reasoning, I guess, or whatever.
But do you agree with it not being available to the jury?
I think that it would definitely, it would definitely sway any juror's thoughts about the case.
Sure.
For sure. Yeah.
I would be interested
mm-hmm.
in knowing.
Remix.
Are there any consistencies in what did take place and in the essay? Because, I mean, if
well,
that's.
Well, so allegedly Dan was shot.
Right.
And not, I don't believe it was super close range.
Mm-hmm.
Her car was seen
Yeah.
Around the area. So she definitely, if she is the one who committed this, she was, you know, smart enough to not pull her car right up to the Culinary Institute.
She told the police she was home.
Yikes.
At the time, their vehicle was near the Culinary Institute.
Yeah.
Let's not also forget, she did ask the police department
to clear her.
To clear her.
As a suspect. So that's what I was trying to get to.
I'm so sorry.
There were some insurance policies, multiple insurance policies on Dan, and there was money to be had by his death. They were having some financial issues. I don't know outside of the financial issues if there were issues between them. I mean, there had to be if you're if this happens. And allegedly, just throwing that out there. But Dan was like a beloved instructor, beloved chef, like his students just adored him. So for him to be murdered in that setting and for his students to be the ones to find him was that's a thing that I don't know if it matters if the jury hears about the essay.
that's some
stuff right there. And I do understand, you know, I guess if you're going to try and figure out how to kill your husband so that you can get the insurance money, it couldn't be at your house, you know, like where your neighbors are just going to be like, oh yeah, Nancy did that. I mean, I guess that tracks. But anyway, there was all this money to be had. So she, if you are dealing with any sort of life insurance and death, you can't be a suspect. You can't, you as the beneficiary can't be the person who committed the, who made the person die.
Surprise.
Surprise. So she needed a, you know, a statement saying that it wasn't me. So she went to the police and was like, hey, guys, are you able to just give me a letter that says I am not a suspect? Because I need to get that over to some people about some things and some stuff.
This really happened.
Yeah.
This really happened. This is
I mean, that alone, but I'm sure that will be entered into evidence. And that's going to help people shape an opinion.
You know who wouldn't? Sure. You know who would be all over this? Jessica Fletcher. she would not be confused
about what's happening
about
here.
What's happening here.
No, there's not a, I mean, yeah. So the trial is continuing. Yes. Court TV has picked it up. I'm sure that'll be an interesting listen at some point. It's sort of very Portland. Like the headline is very Portland, like local romance novel writer or author is on trial for murdering her husband. And the, I mean, to be clear, her book titles, one's like, oh man, I should have not brought this up.
Oh, right. There was,
Yeah, they're definitely like.
Two of the titles were just like, wait a minute, what?
The Wrong Lover. The Wrong Husband, The Wrong Brother, Dance of Passion.
This is, I would not describe this as a dance. Nance, no. No Nance, no.
Caught in the middle.
Of a murder trial.
Okay.
Okay. We got a couple of texts. First, Malcolm says, loved your podcast episode on the Oscars. We too.
Oh, you listen.
We have been. It's been a continuing conversation,
man,
in
it's
our
rough
personal
out here.
Life and in the social needs for weeks.
Really appreciate that. Thank you.
We have a text from Cam. Hi, my family is mostly from Ohio, half white and half Mexican.
Oh my God, do you hate Mexicans?
Part of the reason that messaging works is that there are actually a lot of Latinos in Ohio. My white racist cousin works at a warehouse where there was an ICE raid on the job. That type of stuff happens all the time because our borders are militarized. ICE is allowed to be, it's allowed to be active because Ohio is within 100 miles or whatever the number is from a border, the Canadian border.
Border.
ICE is super active in the state. Thank you for that perspective, Cam.
Very much. Thank you very much. I wonder why they don't talk about their border to Canada, though. He very specifically says Joe Biden's
southern border. Yeah.
And so with that information, it is, I mean, that is helpful. Thank you for that insight, because now we understand there are brown people that live there. So now it makes sense. We should, in fact, just be racist about it.
Wow. Wow.
Not that I didn't think brown people lived in Ohio.
Right.
I just mean JD has things to say, but about the wrong.
Yeah.
The wrong border.
Yeah. But we understand now why it lands.
We know why it lands.
Unbelievable.
Wow. That is
okay.
Really something else. All right. I'm doing it.
Okay.
Are you ready?
Sleeves rolled up.
As you guys know, we are going to have a governor race coming on up, and we got to keep our eye on the ball here.
Yes.
The, I believe it was the Oregonian/Oregon Live that, you know, asked Republican candidates for Oregon governor, what they felt, how they felt, and how they would have dealt with political violence. Specifically, 2020 here in Portland.
Mm-hmm.
Specifically, the what would we call it?
Incursion at the State House.
At the State House,
yeah.
And then the inbred insurrection that happened on January 6th.
Right.
I'll just read now. Before the January 6th insurrection at the U.S. Capitol, Oregon's own Capitol saw right-wing demonstrators stage a similar assault in response to COVID-19 restrictions in December of 2020. Candidates for governor are already strategizing on how they would deal with the issue of political violence that Oregon is so painfully familiar with. House Republican leader Christine Drazen, one of this year's candidates, led her caucus to unanimously vote to expel Mike Nierman, the Republican who let the rioters into the building and coached them on how to break in. Nierman pleaded guilty to a misdemeanor, crime of official misconduct. Six men who attacked the Capitol have pleaded guilty to spraying police with bear spray. The Oregonian asked Oregon's conservative gubernatorial candidates how they would respond to a similar act. Jessica Gomez and Bud Pierce of Medford and Salem respectively expressed shock and disappointment to the actions of the protesters. They both promised to speak out against political violence. Conservative candidate Bridget Barton sympathized with the demonstrators, saying that the government was wrong to close the state, to close the Capitol to the public. I believe her quote was, "This is their house."
Mm-hmm.
Other candidates like Sam Pulliam, mayor of Sandy, promised the full prosecution of all rioters and referred to the protests in Portland as being more violent than the December 2020 insurrection. Though they differed in the directness of condemnation of right-wing protesters, all of the conservative candidates stressed that they supported the enforcement of law and order and they didn't agree with political violence. One of the things that I wanted to make clear here is in that story, these candidates have made clear what they consider political violence.
Right.
Mike Nierman opening that door and taking a walk around several blocks and then coming back the other way and, you know, letting those folks in. That's their house. They're supposed to be able to go in there. What were we doing closing that down? That isn't violence. That is simply, tyranny in the way of COVID-19 restrictions.
Right.
In a time when, you know, we certainly did not know as much as we know now about COVID. And, it's my thought that it's definitely correct to keep people away from each other as much as possible when we're trying to figure out how this is transmitted. And they still were not, you know, positive or at least telling us that it was aerosolized, you know.
Yeah.
So anyway, for Stan Pulliam to make clear that, that was a thing that happened at the Capitol, but like, really, what about you guys in Portland with all those Antifas doing the violence to the property? Property violence.
Tell me about it. Speak more about this property violence.
I can't imagine. Can't imagine how we could be talking about these law. You know, these this is Blue Lives Matter here. This is that group. This
it
is
couldn't
the,
be. How, couldn't be.
You know, this is, I believe in law and order, and what is a place without it? And gotta have more cops on the beat. And they were spraying y'all police friends with bear mace. They were fighting their way into, I mean, the video is like, what? WTF?
Slamming up against wall, pinning them against the doors, like...
To your brethren, you know, the people that are like, must uphold, they can do anything they need to. But they only apparently really matter when they're killing people.
Dude, that's infighting. I'm really confused.
It's just clan on clan violence.
What is happening?
Can't believe
here? Yeah. Yeah. The fact that Nierman was able to plead guilty to a misdemeanor.
The fact that that's a misdemeanor. Like, fam. What?
Your actions, your purposeful, very purposeful actions led to endangering the lives of every employee in that building.
Yes.
Your coworkers that are just trying to do their job. And then the people that are supposed to be protecting you. Why is that a misdemeanor? Like, bro. And it wasn't even cleverly executed.
I mean, I don't know. That was a pretty good walk around the block.
It'll take me a little.
Looked pretty
walk.
Good to me.
Did it? Yeah.
He was just like, oh, I'll go through the back door.
I really would like to know if someone was managed, if this, and the investigation's over, I'm assuming at this point, if there was a call to look into his text messages and how this was exactly coordinated, you know?
It was at an Oath Keepers meeting. Just kidding. That's not true. I do want to mention, though, because we are keeping our eyes. Shout out to Alex, because last week we were talking about Betsy Johnson, and who is running as an independent. So they did also ask Betsy this question, and she was very much along the line of, I support the police. I support law enforcement. Want to make sure that there's none of those political violences happening, and I'll do everything to stop it. What they really mean by that is I will do everything to stop any of the protests that I don't like. I will absolutely do anything. I will jail you. I will allow them to tear gas you if you break a window, because property over people. And if, you know, the police do something and abuse their power and hurt you, kill you, that's really just a part of the job. And, you know... Should you have really been out by the Justice
that's
Center
where
that
I was
night?
Gonna, that's where I was going to go next.
What were you wearing?
Where were you doing? Man!
Huh?
This is why we are fiancé. She jumps right in my mind. She pulls the mess out before I even get a chance to say it sometimes. It's really, really convenient. Like, what were you doing out there?
What were you doing out there?
Huh?
After dark.
After the dark time, the dark hours. What are you doing out there? Huh? Up to no good? Well, you get maced.
I just want to remind everybody that the Portland police shot a naked woman who was standing in the middle of the street with her hands up, shot her in her feet with rubber bullets. What do you think they did that for? That's the question I want to ask these candidates.
Was she a perceived threat?
Was that what all that gear she had on?
Right.
Was so threatening?
Concealing a weapon?
I mean, you're behind shields. Anyway, we're going to have to move forward because it's... Do we have Alex? Not yet. I'm going to keep talking then.
Yeah, like, that's a really good example of...
I want to know how they would feel about that. Reporters on the beat, can you please... Like, I need some pushback. I also need some different questions. When we're asking what would you do about the protest, like, this was supposed to be specifically about the state capitol being taken over.
Right.
That is, in fact, political violence, right? And the misuse of words and misappropriation and then the blowing it out of proportion, right? Like, everybody who didn't live in Portland absolutely thought Portland was on fire 100 days straight.
Oh, yeah.
The entire city is burning. It's Mad Max. How are you guys living?
Yeah.
Can you even go to the grocery store without dying? It was three blocks.
Yeah, people were definitely checking on us.
And so the blowing it out of proportion that happens is going to happen, but we need the pushback. Like, we can't, as the media, like, feed into it, right? And then just tell that story that isn't real.
That's where the accountability starts.
We need it.
That's where the accountability starts. We got to at least be able to ask honest questions and hold them to answering those very direct questions.
Yeah.
And not shifting us all over the place. Well, you know, thank you for your question, but I'd really like to talk about.
Right.
No.
Right.
No. You don't thank me for my question and then disregard my question.
And then tell me what the weather is.
I'd prefer to use no thank you for your question. What I'd really like to talk about.
I would also prefer that.
Yeah.
We're about to get in some juicy deets.
Ooh.
Here to talk about the police oversight group being put on pause is news editor for the Portland Mercury, our good friend, Alex Zielinski. Good morning, Alex.
Morning, Alex.
Good morning.
How are we today?
Doing well. Happy this week is more than halfway over.
Yes.
Happy the sun is shining. Small things.
Small wins, yeah.
And yeah, happy to break down this kind of tangled, I guess, deja vu of an oversight group pausing.
I'm really happy you said that, because I want to make sure that we hammer home this is we've seen this before,
right?
Yeah. So just for some background, in 2014, the city of Portland was basically sued by, or in 2012, actually, the city of Portland was sued by the Department of Justice for, because of its police officers using disproportionate force and violence against people with mental illness. And that turned into a settlement agreement that was reached in 2014 with the DOJ between the DOJ and the city. And a piece of that settlement agreement was that Portland had to pledge to create kind of an community oversight group to make sure that police in the city were following the terms of the settlement agreement, which included kind of just, you know, a lot of new training, a lot of community engagement, just different measures to show that, like, yes, the Portland police are doing better or improving the way that they engage with people, with anyone, but especially including people who had, mental health issues. And so this community group was created, 2014-ish, and chugged along for a couple years until kind of a disinvestment from the city when it came to staffing the group and also making sure that people who, volunteers had to step down, that they were replaced. And there was a lot of kind of just like infighting and drama at these meetings, because there were police officers who were on the board. There were people who disagreed with kind of police oversight on the board. A lot of kind of public meltdowns and sparring, which led to the then incoming mayor, Ted Wheeler, in 2016, coming in saying, okay, we're going to put this whole thing on hold. I'm going to create something new that does a better oversight and is more effective. And so we're going to shut this one oversight group down. And so in 2018, he created his new oversight group that had a lot more people on it, that had no police officers on it. It was all just community members. There was a whole plan for what would happen if, and basically lots of plans to address the issues with the first oversight group, like making sure that there would be people on the back burner to sub in if folks decided to step down, making sure there was enough staff and support to keep these meetings going. And now, a few years later, those promises have kind of fell through the cracks again. We have really no staff. A lot of staff has quit or stepped down. Right now, the city is scrambling to hire new folks to oversee this volunteer group. And the number of folks on this committee has been split in half. A lot of people have stepped down and not been replaced. And a lot of the decisions being made and kind of conversations happening during these meetings are, you know, kind of leading to some divisiveness in the community. And so last week, Ted Wheeler showed up at one of these, at the group meeting and said, "Hey guys, we're going to put this on pause for 60 days to figure out what's going on. And maybe hire some people and fix some things," which is what he kind of did last time. He put the group on pause before dissolving it. And so a lot of folks in Portland who've been following this kind of saga are pretty disappointed and frustrated with the cycle that this has been kind of displaying of, you know, the city saying, yes, we're going to have an oversight, police oversight group, and then slowly kind of backing away from actually staffing it and making sure it's you know, doing what it's supposed to do. Another thing that's kind of interesting is it just looks bad maybe for optics is that, you know, this decision came right after this oversight group started asking questions and wanted more information about that training slide deck that you might recall that meme on it. Yeah. And started, you know, pressing folks at the city and the police bureau to answer questions about it. And, you know, like a month later, this is kind of where things are at. And that was kind of the same timing with the previous iteration of this group. They started pushing the police bureau to really explain their deadly use of force policy and, you know, explain why and how police officers decide to shoot people. And police in the city were kind of hesitant to get into details there, were pushing back, and then it was put on pause, and then it was, you know, shut down. So the dynamics and the optics don't look great. The idea that police oversight group can be just put on pause, like that police do not need to be, you know, monitored for a few months as part of a settlement agreement with the federal government is a little iffy. It's going to be interesting to hear kind of what the federal judge who oversees this agreement kind of says about that in, you know, upcoming court hearings on the agreement. But for most, it kind of just says, it points to kind of the city's disinvestment in a true volunteer-led police oversight.
So, Alex, are reporters and journalists able to ask Ted, "Hey, we did this before. Are you doing the same thing that you did before?"
Right.
You know,
I mean, people in the oversight group asked him that last week, you know, and folks who are wondering what's going on, and he says, "No, this is just going to be a pause. It's different. We're not shutting it down. This is just a moment." I mean, to be fair, they happened to lose two staff members right around the same time, and everywhere people are, you know, the like job market's a little wonky right now, and it's not their fault if people are resigning, and they don't have anyone to staff this work. But it seems like there would be other ways to fill the gap instead of just pausing the work of this group that still wants to keep going, you know. So, yeah, basically the explanation is this isn't the same. We literally have no one to, you know, set up these meetings and to kind of check the inbox and make sure they're running, the meetings are running and everything. So we can't convene until we hire new folks and until, you know, we iron out some of the details with how this program's running. And I think, I mean, the mayor's office is very aware this is the exact same thing that happened a few years ago. And, you know, I think he probably does not want it to go the same way. That would push us out of any kind of agreement with the settlement agreement, which would just, you know, the city really does not want to be in this agreement any longer, because it's been a decade since we were confronted with this problem, and
here we are still dealing with it.
There hasn't, much hasn't changed aside from training and, and some like hiring of new police officers and creating new job titles, but, we're still being held accountable by the federal government for a lot of problems with our police department still. So
it's amazing. I remember some of the early information coming out as far as his reasoning for putting this group on pause. Of course, as you stated, it's understaffed, and we don't have enough people to actually move forward the way it needs to. He's been saying that the police are understaffed and we don't have the proper resources. Do we put them on pause? I for one.
Right.
Yeah. Like, it just doesn't make sense. We're in a position right now.
They're under-trained.
They're under-trained. They're understaffed. They're under investigation. And the group that's supposed to be monitoring police conduct is what you want to put on pause. I mean, this isn't the Scooby-Doo mystery. I think we can kind of, it's pretty obvious what's happening here. It's just really disappointing. It's really, really disappointing.
And this is a group that, like, everyone in last week's meeting, on the majority voted that this was not something that they wanted to do, even though the vote really had no power. But they wanted to keep meeting. They wanted to keep kind of going through this pause. But the city, said, you can't really be flexible with public meeting laws in a way where you don't have everything set up to make sure the public tunes in and all these things that are, important. But yeah, you're right. Like, this is not, it would just take maybe a few members of city employees to help.
Yeah.
Play a little bit back up for a few times a month. But yeah, hard to know where this will take us. I mean, the interesting thing is that in the midst of this 60-day pause, the city is going to have to go to a federal courthouse before a federal judge with the DOJ. It's their kind of yearly or quarterly check-in with the oversight judge to say, like, how things are going with their settlement agreement. And they're going to have to explain to him that, well, we don't have that oversight group that, we settled and agreed upon. And that's probably going to sound great to the judge's ears. So,
But then what could happen, Alex? What would be... What could happen if the judge says, hey, man, you are continuously not in compliance? I mean, what could that mean?
So basically that means if the judge believes that the city is not in compliance in this way, then it would force the city and the DOJ to go into like mediation to talk about how to resolve the problem. There could be some penalties. Mostly the penalties are just, the city will have to be under this oversight or this, settlement for longer, which costs a lot of money. The lawyers who are city lawyers, who basically all their time is spent trying to make sure everyone's following the rules and prepare for these hearings, those salaries and that it costs the city in ways that aren't totally visible, right? Like, it's not like a huge cut to funding or anything. It doesn't change, our police department at all. It's just more time, more money of finding, ways to reach negotiations in court that make this judge happy, that make the Department of Justice happy. And someone mentioned that last week on the oversight board. They said, okay, is the city going to be in trouble in any way? Like, how will we, like, members of the public understand that, you know, there's like neglect here. And the city attorney just kind of pointed to, well, over time, the amount of money, it'll just be more frustrating and delayed. And there really isn't like a hard penalty necessarily. It's just more dragging at our feet towards an eventual conclusion.
Great. Right. So there's no consequence.
Yeah. But yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Cool.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Alex, yep. Thank you.
That's,
thank you for giving it to us just like that.
Exactly what we know and exactly what
you're
we don't want to hear.
Those are your words.
Yeah. Right. Okay. Those are my words. Those are my words. Thank you. Alex, thank you so much for joining us. Yeah.
Yeah.
We love it every single week. Wow. Okay. That was Alex Zielinski, news editor of the Portland Mercury. Tune in every Thursday, 8:45 a.m. to hear an update from the Mercury right here on News of My Fiance. Thank everyone that chimed in on text messages. Thank you. Thank you so much. You make the show even more fun. It's amazing.
We appreciate every single one.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Even when you tell us we're too loud and we're yelling at you. We appreciate it.
We appreciate you. Appreciate you. And let's not forget, I know we say it every week, poverty is a policy choice.
They're choosing it, y'all.
They're choosing it. And none of us are free until we're all free.
Bye.
All right. Thanks for listening. Stay tuned for Tom Hartman.